What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough, go through some things, and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. If you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift, to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show.
We have a very special guest in studio today. She is a coach and consultant, the great and powerful Jamie Thurber. Welcome.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for joining us.
I love that intro. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like a puff of smoke.
When yeah.
Right? Yeah. Explosion, yeah. Fireworks yeah. go off. Murph, right. Edit that in there.
Well, Jamie, you know, for the people out there that don't know you, can you just give us kind of like a little brief summary of who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So I started in the coaching space about 10 years ago online. Mainly came in trying to help people with their management and their systems and their businesses. I didn't even really know how I was going to do that, but I had the operations skills and I had a really good coach at the time who taught me how to do that. So I came in and helped businesses create systems and structures and communication channels. And what was cool was for the first time, like the first 4 years of my business, I had no local clients. So some of those people I worked with for a couple of years, I've never even met in person. So it's wild. And I've been able to grow that into a place where a lot of those business owners that I was helping manage, their questions in the conversation was more about them than it was about the business often. So that led me into, I was doing my own personal development at the same time. And so I was able to have those kinds of conversations and it led into more of a coaching space instead of management. And it's just bloomed there. It's never a dull moment. I really enjoy it. Yeah. I focus a lot with people who want their lives to look differently than the norm. And they're not really sure how to manage it all, basically. How do I, you know, like exactly like your show, how do I be a good husband, run a good business, take care of myself? I don't know how to do all that at the same time. Usually one of them doesn't get as much attention. So we work on that a lot. And I'm often just the sounding board, or I'm the person who can help them write out a process for a new employee or whatever it is. And I work with people long term usually. So I become kind of a part of their team, a part of their family. It's fun.
That's awesome.
And now do you work with more men or women?
When I first started, it was more men. I'd say now I'm 60-40, so 60% men. What's funny is a lot of my women are similar to me. They have a lot of male traits, I should say, in the way they do their businesses. And they don't necessarily want to anymore. So I'm able to kind of help with that. But they're usually really hardworking, like crazy dedicated women. It's really funny. I'm like, oh, I guess I'm attracting them. Yeah. But it's a lot of men. So, which I love. I find that a lot of my male clients, the only person they have to talk to sometimes about like the real things that are bothering them because they're in these positions in every other parts of their lives. So it's a special relationship.
Well, I'm sure because your guys are diving into pretty personal stuff, it gives you a unique perspective on men.
What are some of those perspectives and things that you're picking up that maybe you might be able to share with other women that they might not understand, or even share with other men that they might not get themselves?
Yeah. So that's a great question. I would say there's a few things in business specifically. I find that my male clients have a harder time managing staff than my female clients do. They often don't want to be an asshole. They're like, they're going to think I'm a jerk. And I realized through all my years of kind of watching this transpire, really what would happen is these guys would often be concerned about looking like a jerk when the only reason they did was because they were quiet for so long, and then they finally snap, and then they're mad and they're yelling, and everyone's like, oh my God, why are you so mean to me? Whereas in if you have the ability to stand up for yourself or be very clear about expectations and hold people to those things from the get-go, then no one's going to think, oh my gosh, where is this coming from? Like, you're such a jerk when you explode. But there is a big issue because, similar to a lot of the standards women have to deal with, there's also a lot of standards on men of how you're supposed to show up, how you're supposed to lead, that you're not supposed to have emotions, that you're not supposed to. There's a lot of that goes on where I'm talking to these men. It's funny, most of my male clients, I talk to them really early in the morning before they start their day. That's like the only time I can get them. And it's, I don't know if I can talk to that guy about this today. I have more stuff to do. So the excuses will come in, and we talk about ways to frame that differently a lot, and like, hey, you can be a human being too. You don't have to be this like king on a castle, you know, thinking you have it all figured out. Be a normal person and say, hey, are you having a hard time? Like, what can I do to help you? That kind of thing. So that's a big reoccurring across the board for many years. And I think for women with men that they're, whether they're in a relationship, married, whatever, there's a couple things that's big. One is that I've also studied the differences between how men and women's brains work. And men, as you guys might know, like, you get home and you kind of need a transition period. I remember my father doing this as a kid. He worked nights at an automotive plant. And so he would come home and he had the exact same routine every single time. Like, I could tell you the whole thing, like, play by play, because he did it the same way every day. So when I learned this, I was like, oh my God, I watched this happen my whole life. But my mom would respect that time. She didn't like jump on him with questions and I need this and I need that, which is what I watch a lot of my friends who are married do, clients who are married do. And it leads to fights that could have been prevented. Where if everybody understood that, like, hey, I need 10 minutes. Like, maybe it's that every time you get home, you want to take off your shoes, go take a shower. If somebody didn't throw things at you the moment you walked in the door, your brain is going to be in a different place if you're allowed that 10 minutes. And so most women don't listen to me when I tell them that. Mm-hmm. But
I've literally never heard. That's so true.
That makes complete sense.
Yeah. I've never heard that spoken out before. But yeah, no, that makes complete sense.
It's definitely helpful. I mean, I do it in my relationship. Tony has a demanding job, and when I can read that, I'm like, well, don't get me wrong. There are times that the moment he comes in, I have things I want to say to him immediately, and I don't always catch myself. And when I don't, and I do it anyway, it's not fun. Like, it's not the conversation I wanted.
Right.
So that's a big one, that if women would take my advice for that, that would be huge. And I think just remembering that men are allowed to have feelings too, and they actually do. And a lot of times they don't really know how to express them, or they express them differently. A big, powerful thing is realizing that both of you likely process things differently.
Sure.
So if your wife married you for a while then divorced you and then married you, like, the way that you process can be different than you. And so if you don't recognize and learn the way that your husband or spouse processes things, then it's going to make it really hard to communicate, because they're not going to process it the same way you do. And so same thing comes into work and workspaces. You know, I learned that with my clients. Like, if I present something a certain way and he reacts a certain way, okay, well, what's another way we can present that? Or maybe I need to say, hey, take a look at this before our call. So then he has time to digest it differently. Like, everybody's different. And a lot of people don't give space for that.
Well, and speaking exactly to what you were saying there, I mean, no, I've had that conversation with my ex-wife, and she's like, no, you and Dalton are the exact same person. It's just, he does things just a little bit different that kind of correlate to the way I do things than what you did. And I was like, yeah, well, cool. Glad you guys are compatible. It's great. I'm happy for you guys. But no, that's literally what it was. Yeah. So.
Wow. Well, how long have you been doing this?
Coaching for 10 years.
Wow. Okay. So you've been doing this for a decade, you know, and helping businesses and everything. Like, what's the biggest mistake you see entrepreneurs make that's like a repeatable thing? Like, or that you see a lot of them make the same mistake?
They wait too long to hire help. Often it costs a whole lot more money to have someone come in and fix something than it does to invest up front in getting it done the way you need it to begin with. Whether it's accounting, that's a big one. A lot of people don't hire an accountant, or they don't hire a bookkeeper that actually knows how to bookkeep. They just like say Sally at the front desk because, oh yeah, she can enter that stuff in there, no problem. Yeah. And then it ends up costing them a lot more money because going back through a year's worth of your finances takes a whole lot more time than just doing it month to month. So if I can talk somebody into investing in having a bookkeeper that knows what they're doing, have their hands in their stuff monthly, that's a huge thing. It can save you a lot of time and money and heartache at the end of the day, but it also lets you make smarter decisions. I think a lot of people either make decisions kind of on the fly in their businesses, which if you know your numbers though, okay, that's fine. But a lot of people don't. The majority of people, when I ask, how much does it cost for you to run your business every day? They have no idea.
Right.
Or even for the month, you know, they don't know. And so that's a huge, huge thing that I would say, across the board.
Hiring help.
Yeah. Earlier than finding the way that, and if you can't, because like in my situation, I couldn't hire somebody at first. So I learned how to do it. I took classes. I learned a better way to do it. My boss, before I worked for myself, he was a cheapskate about hiring people, and I was his operations manager. And so what he would do is make me take every meeting. Brilliant on his point, because I was on salary also. So I worked way more hours than I should have. But it let me learn these things. And so I picked that up and I'm like, oh, I don't know what he was doing. He's like, oh, Jamie will learn how to do it. And then I won't have to pay an extra person to do it.
Right. Well, what industry was that you worked in before you worked for yourself?
I worked in the automotive industry. So automotive repair and body work.
Okay.
We had a towing company also. So, and before that I was in insurance. So I grew up around cars. And so I happened to meet my boss. I was working handling insurance claims. I met my boss and he was like,
yeah,
I think we need to have a conversation. And since I had car knowledge background from growing up around a dad who's a car guy, it worked out really well. I was able to streamline things for them nicely because I knew what the insurance companies expected and wanted.
Oh, that makes complete sense.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're talking about hiring, because that's something that him and I have struggled with, bringing people onto our teams and things like that. Are when you're working with these people, do you, like, is there a criteria that you help them set to when it comes to hiring? Like, because that's something that we struggle with. What are some criterias, or what are some things that you recommend to your clients when it comes to hiring?
Be clear first. Like, what do you want them to do? What do they need to accomplish? Believe it or not, most people hire people and they don't know. They're like, oh, I'm supposed to have a secretary. I'm like, oh, you are. Okay, what do they need to do?
Yeah.
And especially these days, I explain to people to be open-minded, because a lot of times you could have, like, I had a guy come to me who wanted to go rent an office space. And I'm like, well, what do you need that for? Well, and he like has all these great ideas. And I'm like, well, that's awesome. But you don't have the money to necessarily support that right now. You could hire someone virtually that you meet with once a week and have very clear expectations of them. And that would be enough. But then you wouldn't have the overhead of having a building that you don't need. So that's like a huge piece, is what do you need help with? So sometimes if you don't really know, but you know you're overwhelmed, I'll tell people to keep a list, like a separate list of stuff where they're like, wow, it'd be really nice if somebody would do that for me. It'd be really nice if someone could handle this. Like, if it's something that always is seeming to fall short or you're consistently forgetting, write that stuff down on a list. And that's a really great place to start, because a lot of that stuff, if you were to hire an assistant, for example, they can handle a lot of those things. Being open-minded to how and when you bring those people in and what you ask them to do. A lot of people don't want to ask somebody to help them pick up their dry cleaning, but it's like, if that is the expectation set at the beginning, then why not?
Right.
So I think that's the biggest piece, is making sure that you're clear on what you're looking for and you can tell the person that. And I also think it's big to do quick, when you hire somebody in 30 days, check back up. How's it going? You do a self reflection of how's it going. And keep it going in that direction, because the majority of the reason why you hear people say all the time, I can't find good help, you're not a good manager. It's very often like people, just like in a relationship, people can't satisfy what you need if they don't know what you need. You have to tell them.
Yeah. We had somebody on last week and I think it's a Jocko thing. There's no bad teams, just bad leaders, what they always say. So.
Yeah. A lot of times, yeah. Not always the case, but a lot of times, the better we can get at managing people. But what that is the reason managing people gets hard is because you have to know yourself to be able to manage others.
True.
And a lot of people don't want to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely scary to...
It's hard to look in the mirror sometimes, you know?
Yeah. I mean, but I'll be honest, the best thing I ever did was get into therapy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it completely changed my life. If you would have met me 3 years ago or 4 years ago, you'd be like, fuck this guy. He's an asshole. I don't want to deal with Pat. Like,
I know you 4 years ago. You're all right.
I was all right. But definitely better now than I was back then. So, but no, I mean, diving in and learning all that stuff, it's scary for sure, especially... males of our generation and before. I mean, we were taught not to show emotion, you don't cry, toughen up, like stuff like that. But we're looking back at it now, like, hey, that's pretty detrimental to somebody to tell them to like not understand their emotions and like,
push them down.
Yeah. Suppress them.
Then we wonder where like anger problems
right.
and did that come from. Alcoholism, like all that comes from you have no outlet.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Because it's got to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And so it goes usually into not great places if we're not taught how to talk about it and go somewhere. Like, you're probably a much better host because you go to therapy than you might have been 4 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because that just all that lives inside of you, it's going to come out somewhere.
Yeah.
So, well, many people chase success without defining what it actually is to them. How do you guide your clients to find the version of success for them or that aligns with their life?
It's typically, again, I'll ask them what success means to them. Most of the time, people don't have an answer for that question because we just hear the word success and they think I need to be successful. And I'm like, cool, what does that mean to you?
And this then is different like, for everyone.
Huh? I'm like, yeah, we need to talk about that before we go someplace. One thing I like to do with people is it's important that we know where you are right now. Like, we get clear about where you're currently standing so we can get you where you want to go. Because you can tell me where you want to go, but if we're not clear about where you are, how do we connect the dots that we don't? And so, what does success look like? And typically it comes from me asking them a bunch of questions and they get very uncomfortable during the conversation, but that's how you dig past that surface level answer. So it would be what's most important to you. And everyone will say their family because they think they're supposed to. And it's like, I'm not telling you that your family's not important, but be honest with me, like what's most important to you? And a lot of times it takes a few questions to get there. And it comes down to most people, it's money, time, freedom. And then you look at, okay, what does money mean to you? Because a lot of money to you might be different than what I look at as a lot of money, vice versa. My expenses might be minimal. So 60 grand a year is a lot of money to me because I don't have a lot of expenses. You know, it all just depends on the person. So breaking that down and doing some of that work with yourself too is important because often when you're like, I don't ask people that question right away because they're not comfortable enough with me to tell me the truth yet.
Well, what does success look like for you?
This, like the fact that it's a middle of the day on a Wednesday and I can go in and have an interview, you know, for me, it was always the goal was to be able to do things I enjoy. I don't have any clients anymore that I don't like. Like, I think everybody goes through that place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All my clients are rewarding. I love them. They're family to me. I get to do things on my own schedule. It pays my bills. And I have that ability to have that freedom. I also have the ability to say what I want to do or say what I want when I want to and all of those pieces. And I think that success comes not only from my business and myself, but it comes from the relationships I choose to have.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. Like that's something like what success means for me is exactly what you said, having the ability to just kind of dictate my days and how they go.
Freedom.
Mm-hmm. And I used to, you know, I think of, you know, years ago when I worked jobs and I'd just be stuck in this building for this 6 or 7 hours. And it's like, oh, I just cannot wait till that clock hits 3 o'clock and I can leave. And, you know, and just not having that feeling anymore. And it's been years since I've had that feeling, but, you know, looking back on it, it's just like, it makes me just remember where I am today. And it always makes me thankful that I'm like, man, I've come a long way, but I still have a long way to go. I'm not nowhere close to where I want to be, but like I've definitely made some progress and, but anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. No,
same for me.
I love it.
Freedom and joy. I mean, and happiness. Like that was one. I mean, going through, like I mentioned, therapy and then, you know, the divorce and all of those things. Just, I mean, I was just an unhappy, miserable fuck. Like I just was. And, you know, for me, it was like, all right, freedom. How do I take that back? So it was, you know, there's some agents that I've got, I just stopped working with because they took some of that joy and happiness away from me, like working with them. So stopped working with agents, you know, and that kind of that freedom leads to like, okay, what's most important? My kids. And being able to, especially now, since I have them limited time, I want to be able to spend as much time with them as I can. So having the freedom for what I do allows that to happen. So it's like, yeah, family is important, but the most important thing is the freedom because that allows me to spend time with my family. And then which brings me joy and happiness. Yeah. So for me that, and then obviously working with agents that I like and I can be friends with and that like that aren't bringing me stress. You know, obviously that's going to make the whole process for me and my team and as well as the clients better. And it's just going to make for a more joyful and happy experience when you get to the closing table. So no, it's the freedom and happy and joy. Those three things are, I guess, happy and joy kind of coincide together. Yeah. But yeah, those are my definitions of success.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, today's a culture of instant gratification. What's the single most underrated skill for long-term success?
Ooh, consistency. It really is across the board. Like I tell people, whether it's a podcast or a social media brand or, you know, a roofing company, it doesn't really matter. The deal is that if you are good at what you do or you're continuously learning and like honing your craft, which I think everyone should, if you're continuously doing that, and you're operating from a place of integrity, it'll continue to feel good. But as long as you don't quit, you're not going to fail. We fail when we give up. We fail when we stop learning. We fail when we stop showing up in a way that we feel good about. And, you know, when I say that to people, they're like, yeah, okay. And just trust me.
So true.
It's that cheesy picture that you've seen a million times where the guy's like digging into the dirt and like the diamonds are just a little bit away. It's just the truth.
It is 100%. That's a reoccurring thing on the show is consistency. It's something we talk about. I mean, almost seems like almost every other episode or something.
Yeah.
This like subject comes up but it's so true. And no matter what you do, whether it's your business, whether it's your fitness, your health, your relationship, everything comes down to consistency and like being able to, you know, it's a lot of that mundane, like monotonous shit that you're doing over and over and over again, but that all that shit adds up and eventually you get to those diamonds.
Well, that's the one I saw yesterday was the guy that works with or like a rock breaker or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he'll sit there and pound on the rock for 100 times. And that 101st one, it finally splits and knowing that, hey, it didn't just split because of that one, but the 100 other strokes that it took before to get there. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it's one of the most important, like consistently, just, I'm not going to keep harping on it, but yeah,
right. The thing I come across the most is people who don't reach a place that we were just talking about, our versions of success. They don't get there because they're not willing to do the uncomfortable, annoying, mundane things every day or get to a place where they can hire someone to do that stuff for them.
Right.
But that's how you get there. You know, and most people aren't willing to do those weird, hard things. It's like it's a level of devotion. A lot of people say discipline. Recently, my coach told me like, no, it's devotion to self. And I'm like, oh, that's so much deeper.
Right.
Like, cause we are disciplined. We think we're like in the gym, like lifting things. There's nothing wrong with that either. But with the devotion piece, like you're devoted to that freedom and that joy, you're going to do those little things that you might not want to in that moment because you know that it's feeding that thing that you want.
That's great. It's a great way to think about like it. That. That's awesome.
Right. It's
a
good word.
Right?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Not disciplined. I'm devoted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. Just adds a little more like emotion.
Yeah. Like feel that
more emotion to devoted being to devoted versus discipline.
Yeah.
So, but you took almost 2 years to focus on your health and still manage to sustain your business. What did that teach you about productivity, sustainability, the way you define work?
So much. Holy moly. Like, okay. I was like running laps in high heels in the shops, like, staying late every single night, one night, like get into a jumpsuit to undercoat cars because all these guys are complaining because they say they can't get it done. So I'm like, screw you guys. One of the guys, will you stay and load these cars for me one after another? He's like, yeah. So those kinds of situations where like, if it needed to be done, I'll get it done. But I took it to such an extreme where it was just because I was unwell and I had these symptoms since I was a kid, and no one ever could figure them out. I just did my best not to like pay attention to them. And so I would work And that was what I would do. And then oftentimes, once a month or two, once every other month or anytime I traveled, my body would shut me down for a few days. And like in a bunch of we're not going to talk about ways, like it just not good. Nothing was working. None of my systems are okay. And then I finally reached this place where I could tell something more serious was happening. Like it was like my body was getting too tired to do it anymore. And I had this realization, and I had slowed down what I thought slowed down before that. And then basically what happened is I flew to Utah to go speak in an event with one of my best friends who I'm so comfortable with and never have a stress around. And I just couldn't control my body. Like I was projectile vomiting. It was like a whole thing. I got in a car and drove home. Like a panic attack? It's like my body would have these panic attacks because once I would settle, all the things I was ignoring all day long all came in at the same time. So it would last for days though. And so when that happened in Utah, I told Tony, my fiance, I'm like, I cannot put my body back on an airplane. It would be so, talk about devotion. I was like, it would be the opposite of creating a relationship with my body if I do that. He's like, whatever, you know, that's 19 hours, right? I'm like, I don't care. So I rented a car and I drove home. It was like a drastic step that I made in my relationship with myself. And since then, I remember like laying in our room sobbing, going, even if tomorrow somebody gave me a pill that made all of my symptoms go away, there's all this backlog. I have to do something different. I would go right back into working like a crazy person. And then there'd be another problem because it's not healthy, no matter what. So to like spare you all of the medical details and stuff, but it's functional medicine, luckily has I found the right people that were willing to go through it with me, healing root causes of things. So when you heal the root cause, it's not comfortable. It takes a long time. I've done a lot of protocols that are not fun over the past year and a half. And during that, I realized that energetically, my energy output was so big that I had nothing else left to be able to take care of my health, what I needed to take care of, which is why I took a step back from podcasting, from posting. Like I was a girl who was live on Facebook every day, posting a long form post, posting a quote, doing an episode, like all constant content. Okay.
Yeah.
And realizing, you know, none of that shit matters if I'm not okay. And I'm not okay anymore. This isn't going to work. And it made me realize one of the things that helped me build my online presence was the commitment to being in integrity. So it just no longer was an integrity anymore. So I took a huge step back. I was able to have a conversation with each of my private clients, which I speak to once a week on a call, and maneuver their schedule around a little bit to where I was talking to people earlier in the day because I had learned that I had like an okay tolerance of time earlier in the day. But by like 2 o'clock, I was done. Like my system was like, nope, no more brain for you. So like my wittiness was gone. I couldn't think of words half the time. Like it was wild. And I'm just so lucky to have had. While working that hard was not healthy, it did set me up in a way where my people were still there. I still paid my bills. People were still, when I did have the energy to post something, they were still interacting. Like I had built that foundation, which is something I've always taught people. And now I'm teaching them to do it in a way that's not, you know, banging their heads into the ground and hurting themselves. And I remember years ago, my therapist had asked me, she was like, would you ask anyone else to do things that way? And I was like, no, that would be terrible of me to expect that of them. And she was like, do you hear what you just said?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh shit. So it was wild. And I just actually, when I met you guys, I had just started being back out, doing things, you know, I had just gone to like our first event. Tony gets invited to a lot of events and, there was just, I couldn't. You know, for so long. So I like tipped my toe in, like, am I going to be okay? See what happens. And so it's still that way. But what I've learned is that we all say our body's important and our health is important.
Until something goes wrong, you really don't.
Yeah. Until you're not listening to your body who's telling you, fuck no, sit down. And then no matter what, like today, I'll be honest, I was the kind of person that it wouldn't have mattered if I was puking in my car before this. I would have come in here and you would have had no idea. Now, I would have called and said, I'm sorry if this like ruins our relationship, but I can't. If that was the case, I had to make that like harsh decision with myself, which was all my own rules. Let's be real. Some people will be jerks about it.
We built shit up in our head way worse than what it actually is.
To me, I'm like, they're going to, my whole like adult career, I'm like, people are going to think I'm terrible if I don't blah, blah, blah. So I would just you know, suck it up or whatever and do it. And it has been a journey of learning about enmeshment, which I don't know if you guys know what that is, but very interesting. So enmeshment is when you are, now I'm not a text going to give you the perfect textbook definition, but
that's all right. We want Jamie's stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's like you're so intertwined in someone else's everything. It's not codependency. It's similar, but it's like, I could do this with some of my clients, even almost like where I'm so involved. I was so involved in all the decisions they were making that it like physically and emotionally affected me.
Okay.
We do this without thinking often. We do this without realizing we're that it's happening. My coach had said to me, she was like, it's a lot of energy and commitment to have one really deep committed relationship. And you're trying to carry on like 20.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, what? I come from a mother who is that way. My mom's like that, the biggest heart you've ever seen. And I didn't know that that was any different, you know? So I'd, even after all the learning I had done, this was just a few months ago that she was like, you have to start untangling some of the places that you're really tangled up, like lifelong friends and stuff. Well, yeah, I don't want you to fight with your husband all the time, but I don't need to be involved in every fight you have with your husband either. We're not 17 anymore.
Right.
You know, and so a lot of times though, we don't realize we're still doing that, but it pulls, it's like having holes in your boat. Like you think you're paddling, you're doing a good job, but there's all these holes behind you. You're like, where's all this water coming from? I don't understand. And it's because this energy is going out to these places that you've had for 20 years that you never stopped and thought, oh, I really don't need to do that. So that's been a huge game changer for how I operate in my relationships, in business relationships. And it's been really cool, actually. It's made much more beautiful, respectful relationships, I think, which is awesome to have, because I wouldn't have said, oh, my relationships were not respectful before. But now I look at it and I'm like, maybe they weren't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I know exactly what you're talking about, because you see it a lot within our industry, within my side of the industry, because like my job is to go out and build relationships with real estate agents, financial advisors, insurance agents. I mean, it's like I have like I'm married to 30 or 40 people that I got to maintain, like those relationships that I got to maintain. And like there's people that are like it's just common to see, and it's always promoted relationships, build relationships, build relationships. And it's like, how, I don't know how many more relationships I can actually take on and still be able to function and be able to be there for my kids and give them they're the ones that deserve the best of my relationship.
Yeah.
Well, and give out like the top, like your best quality.
Right.
Work
exactly.
Too.
Exactly.
Know, like, cause like the second you start putting more on your plate, then the quality of your work's going to suffer.
Oh, absolutely.
When and we beat ourselves up about that too, then it just becomes this little mess.
Cycle.
Yeah.
It's just a cycle.
Yep. This little, good.
No, not fun at all.
Yeah. Well, you talk about creating business that complements your personal life rather than consuming it. What's the first step someone should take who's feeling overwhelmed?
I think, this is fun. Take a real look at what's on your plate and what actually you need to be doing.
Okay.
A lot of times we'll have, so say you make a list and you don't get to everything. So the thing from that list gets moved over, and then you make another list and you don't get, and it's still that same one thing, but it gets moved to the next week and the next week and the next week. So then we're constantly feeling we have this tower of things above us. And a lot of times some of that stuff was either already handled and you just didn't realize it, or is no longer relevant. So often I like to explain it like you have a platter in front of you. It's also looking at, okay, what's time sensitive? If there are time sensitive things on your plate that are over, like, and you feel overwhelmed, handle those first. And then you can break down the other, is there anything you can delegate? Is there anything that you can call someone and say, hey, Pat, I'm not going to be able to get this done for a couple of weeks. Is that okay? Most of the time, the other person, unless they give you a specific date, they don't care, but you care. So it's causing all this stress on you. So look, taking a really honest look at what's on your plate and knowing that like no one's judging you by this, your validity as a human isn't made up on this platter. And that's because that's what causes us to stay overwhelmed long-term, I think.
Totally agree.
I heard this recently and I didn't know this. Napoleon had this strategy where he would wait 3 weeks to respond to correspondence for that very reason, because he said, one, it will either, by the time I get to it, it's either not important anymore, it's no longer relevant. Two, it was already solved. And if it's still there, then I know that it's important and I can solve it right then and there. So
I thought that was,
because that's essentially what I like with emails. Like I'm inundated with emails, hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. I check it 3 times a day. When I wake up in the morning, at lunch, before I end of the day, make sure I get everything cleared out, because I wouldn't be able to get shit done if I'm sitting there just answering emails all day.
Yeah.
Like, I, you know, my, like I said this to my assistant the other day, cause he was email. If you'd answer your, respond to your emails, I'm like, if I sat here and waited for you just to respond to an email, I wouldn't get, wouldn't have a job because I wouldn't be bringing business in, you know? So yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think like you said, people work things up or build things up too much in our head and think that we have to have this thing done right here and right now, when really it's like, all right, I got some time to do this. So that's something that I've been working with my business partner on, because, you know, he's old school where it's like, hey, if someone calls in and is asking for a pre-approval, it has to be done right here, right now, as of today. I'm like, yeah, no, Nick, like, ask him, like, what's your timeline? What are you thinking about buying? Oh, not for a couple of weeks or a couple of months. Oh, great. I'm going to let me get your documents. And then we'll schedule a Zoom call. And then once I have that scheduled, then now I have a timeline on when I have to get this done. And so, yeah, that's been one of the biggest things that's allowed me the freedom to do what I do. And it's been great.
Well, like the instant gratification thing you mentioned earlier, that's the problem. I tell people all the time, I'm like, if you have your social media notifications on, like, why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, because I turn those off. No emergencies are happening.
No.
Like, and same thing in email. If there's an emergency, they're going to call you.
Yes.
Right.
That's the thing, you know, that end of
or
story.
Text.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time that my phone dinged. That wasn't a phone call. Like, I don't get notifications or an alarm because I use it to keep me on track.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a thing. We're so worried that we're going to miss something. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it just causes a nasty ripple effect through everything else that we're doing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like I'm like Pat said, we're constantly inundated with emails, and it's just like, I'll miss an email for sure. Like, cause I'm like, I always let my clients know right away. Like if something's important, call me or text me, because I check my email and I don't know. I'm probably more than 3 times a day, but I need to be better about it some days. Cause there's some days I'll go by and I only check it once or something, you know, but then there'll be other days where I'm on it all day. And, but I'll miss emails. So I'm like, you gotta text me. You gotta call me. Cause that's the stuff that I respond to immediately.
Yeah. I always tell people, usually, if you email me, text me that you email me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
If it's important.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, this instant gratification, having to get things done right away. I mean, you work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and you've seen the behind the scenes struggle. Would you say that this is one of those limiting beliefs they have, or is there other limiting belief? Like if you could eliminate one limiting belief from entrepreneurs that you work with, what would it be?
Oh, that people are going to have an opinion about how much money they're making.
Oh,
people worry about what others are going to think of them if they buy a bigger building or they get a new car or they take a day off. And some of it's real. Like some people do make stupid comments to people for no reason. Oh, must be nice.
Right.
Yeah. Must be nice to record a podcast in the middle of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're right. Like, it is. We've worked our ass off.
That's what I tell people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is nice.
I'm like, it is nice. Yeah. But like I have a client who just bought a city block and he's moving his shop into a bigger building and blah, blah, blah. And people in his town are making these rude comments and he wishes they didn't affect him, but they do, you know? And I try to unravel that for people as much as I can, but that would be the biggest limiting belief, I think. If I could relieve people from the concern about somebody else's opinion on your success or how you do your life, that would be huge.
So good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
What, you know, there's a huge mental shift when someone transitions from employee to owner. What's the hardest part of that transition that nobody talks about?
Oh, remembering that you actually don't have to do it the way you used to when you worked for someone else.
Yeah.
Do it your own way.
I've done that. I remember catching myself going, wait, why am I trying to operate within these weird hours that I wanted to work out at 2:00? I remember this.
Yeah.
I wanted to work out with my trainer at 2 p.m. And then I would like kill myself to get things done a certain way. And I'm like, this is silly. You make your own hours. It's okay. And if tomorrow you don't feel like doing stuff, but your other things are handled, you don't have to do that either. The reason it's hard is because that takes you unraveling a thought pattern that you've had basically your whole adult life. There's rules that are placed on us as kids. You know, you get a job when you're 16 and like, this is what you do. And yeah, there's some of that that you need to bring into your company because you do need to, you know, not just gallivant through the world. You need to have some sort of reasoning, but you can do it your own way. That's the other part. When I kind of talked about being creative about hiring, being able to think of like, that doesn't mean they have to come sit in an office every day for this many hours. This is another piece of it to where if you're really true with yourself and you can trust your own work, then you can be creative with how and when you do things. But it takes a while to be comfortable about it. So I tell people, I'm like, don't give up on that. You know, you have to keep rewriting that story in your head to knowing like, it's okay that I do it this way. Like I'm not a failure. I'm still getting my things done. There's a lot of storylines that need to be changed.
Honestly, I like for me, like I know we do a lot and we talk about, you know, the whole subject of this podcast, or is like, hey, if you're in this situation and you relate, honestly, I think this is all stuff that we should like, should be, because obviously people are, it's great for people that are already in their jobs and all that, but like, let's catch people early. Like, hey, this is stuff that really should be like talked about in colleges and in high school,
yeah,
and at a young age, because you know, it might be too late for some people by the time they're already entering the workforce, if they haven't worked on these things early enough in their life. I mean, I think it was Good Inside that we were reading, where I was talking with the parenting book, where, like you were just saying, that these external rules that are put upon us are causing us to do certain things. And when really it's like, how do we live within the rules of the society, but create our own rules for success and how we live within those guidelines, you know? And, you know, I just think that there's a whole, I just think, all of these conversations need to start being had at such a young age, at you know, in high school, middle school. Like, obviously brains aren't fully developed at that point, but it's still things that you can start preaching at a young age and getting into younger people, so they're not, I mean, that's a, you know, that's our whole generation, we're having to relearn emotions.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
we learned it because that's what our parents do, right? So I know that some of us, like, I was a kid who was like, I don't know, makes sense to me. I don't really like to do it this way. And I would kind of be in trouble a lot because mm-hmm. I was doing things my own way. Not everybody does that.
Right.
I don't know why I didn't care. I just didn't. Like, my brother he wanted his life to be drastically different, and he didn't do bad. He didn't like get in trouble, but he followed a path, and he did. He created this beautiful life for himself that I remember him talking about when we were 15. He was 15, you know. I had no idea what I wanted to do when I was that age, but it would have been great to be able to have conversations with people that where I didn't feel like I was crazy or the bad kid for thinking like, right. Well, why do we have to do it that way?
Yeah. Right.
I had a dad who,
always ask why? Why?
100%.
Best question ever.
Very traditional blue collar family, you know, and, mom stayed home for most until we were old enough. And then she went to school and, you know, dad worked hard all the time. But he always told me you can be anything you want to be. And I never really even knew what that meant. I didn't know wasn't something I even was aware of, you know, growing up. Not even until I was like 24 or whatever that I was even knew it was a thing. But if we're able to let our kids have those thoughts, it's like that lets them think, oh, I can do something else, instead of you have to do it this way and only follow this path. I wish we could get in front of more kids with it, for sure.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's kind of what I think about for this podcast. You know, like I try to like, I almost... You know, people ask what is it about all the time, and I always say, you know, manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, because that's kind of what we say in the thing. But I'm like, sometimes I think I'm doing this for Zach from 10 years ago. You know, like I want to talk to the, you know, the 22-year-old kid straight out of college that doesn't know what the hell to do with his life, mm-hmm. and like, you know, wants to looking for some guidance. And that's kind of what I, when I think about this podcast and what we do all the time, like, kind of what I see for this.
Yeah.
And, we always talk about it, and people ask, is, you know, what are we looking for out of this? I mean, it's like a time capsule for us. Like, this is something like, if we were to pass away today, our kids are going to see like, or even as they get older, look back like, oh, my dad was, that's what where he was doing, or what he was thinking at when I, you know, we're at the same age. So like, obviously we don't have that with our parents, and because they didn't have this sort of technology and things, but ultimately, like, as they get older, I want them to watch this show. I want them to hear all the things that our awesome guests are talking about, like, and be able to pick up things and learn how, like, live the life that they want to live and do it the way that they feel is best for them. And obviously there's going to be some guidance and things along the way and trial and error. But I mean, yeah, that's the one thing that I'm really excited about with this show and having this podcast. So
it's been quite the journey, hasn't
it? That it's been a lot of fun. That's for sure. A lot of, Learned a lot. Every guest we've had has had a, you know, some of their stories may not be interesting to most, but they all have a story to tell. And I always learn something new from every person that we've had on the show. So
that's awesome. That's what I like to say too. I get a nugget from any conversation.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Amazing, yeah. Like, if you're always learning, mm-hmm. like you're never going to stop. If you ever stop learning, or you ever think you're the smartest person in the room, you're not, you failed.
Right.
Yeah. You're in the wrong room.
Yeah.
You're done growing. Yeah. You're done growing at that point. So, you coach a lot of entrepreneurs, leaders, and things like that. What does great leadership look like to you?
I would say it comes from accountability in a big way, but from knowing yourself, from being able to be honest with your people. I have one, I've seen people be so honest, like too honest, where they're like every dollar they're spending, I'm like, nobody needs to know that. That's not the point. Mm-hmm. But being able to be honest about the fact of like, hey, you know, that was kind of hard for me too. What do we need to do? Or sorry, I had a really bad day yesterday. I totally forgot to remind you of this thing. So we need to handle it this way. Or just being able to be a person, but also remember your position. So I think it's important to be able to interact with your people that work with you or work for you and be a little bit elevated. But that elevation comes from how you carry yourself through the rest of your interactions, you know, how they see you acting. So does that mean, and the other thing is like, don't pretend. Like, I don't want you to pretend. I want you to feel that way. Like, work on being that for yourself. That's what makes a really good leader.
And do you feel that shifts or changes when it comes to personal relationships, husband, wife, friends, things like that?
Yeah. I think that people, I don't know that it needs to change, but I think it does typically change for people. I would say a lot of men and women that I talk to, whether they're friends or clients, I see them not bringing that into their relationships and it suffers because of it. I'm privileged to be in a very healthy relationship. We've built a very healthy relationship with a man who is very much so his own human all by himself. And I am very much so my own human all by myself. And it works really well for us. A lot of people, there's the insecurities there, there's codependency, there's fears. And so it, if they could bring the same kind of leadership from their job into their relationship, and we had two people that weren't fighting to be in control, but fighting to work together and like use their household as a team, man, it's like at the end of the day, that's how things run. That's how there's less stress. That's how you do feel supported, even when you are about to have a breakdown because you've been touched 2,700 times today. That's usually my mom's. All the moms, that's their number one. Like, I just can't be touched anymore. Yeah. Like, then just share that piece of information with your husband. Yeah, just be like, I've been touched too much today. This has nothing to do with you. I just need you to touch me.
Leave me alone.
Yeah. And so, but if we would communicate that way, like we would want our boss to communicate with us, right, then it does change the game. If we look at things like a partnership, and it, you know, because imagine if you're a leader and you have a, you know, co-owner, geez, I couldn't think of it. It's not going to work well if neither one of you are acting like a leader or just one of you is, then things don't always work well either.
Well, I think there has to be that healthy balance. I mean, like both partners in a relationship have to be leaders, but it's like one person one day might have to do 100% of the work when the other person's doing zero, but it's never going to be equal 50-50. But as long as you both have those leadership, that mentality, that's going to lead to a successful relationship, just because there are going to be days, I mean, shoot, especially with like with us in this podcast, there was a couple of weeks ago where I was just dead sick. Felt like shit and was starting to feel better and come out of it just in time for us to record, but like still mentally in a fog. And like Zach, I told him when we got here, I'm like, man, I'm going to need you to pick up on that. Like, you're going to need to
carry us
today. Yeah.
And Murph, even on the editing, was like, hey, dude, Zach, you really kind of dominated that conversation. You barely let Pat talk. And I was like, we talked about it before.
Sorry, Murph, we forgot to include you on that message. Yeah. Like, if you couldn't tell that I was dying on camera,
good.
I'm glad. Thanks for making me look good.
Yeah.
But this is why Zach dominated the show. He's like, oh, you're sick. Couldn't tell. I'm like, yeah.
Like, couldn't tell. I was wearing
usually sweating with a towel next to me, just dampening my.
Oh no. Yeah. You know what? The thing with the who, sometimes you're 100%, sometimes you're not. Like, the deal is if people would just quit keeping score.
Right.
Yeah.
Would be a lot better off. It turns into this like tit for tat thing. And it's just like, dude, so much energy is wasted there. Yeah.
Totally agree. Well, so your relationship has a 19-year age gap.
Yeah.
You know, it's lasted a decade. What's something you've learned about masculinity, relationships? What does it take to make a long-term relationship work?
Well, so we've grown a lot together. I think knowing that even though there's an age difference, that doesn't mean that this person is so much better than you, because everybody's walked their own path. Knowing that, so Tony was able to bring a lot of like worldly knowledge to our relationship that like your girl from the Midwest didn't have. It opened my eyes to so many things.
Where is he from? Canada?
He is.
Okay.
Yeah, from British Columbia.
Okay.
And so he's been in the States for 30 years, something like that. Majority in St. Louis. And he was able to bring that to our table. Honestly, like our age gap was weirder for everyone else than it was for us. Yeah. The only time it was ever really relevant is if somebody was like referencing a TV show or a song. you know, I have an old soul and I grew up like that. I love the same kind of music that he does. And so a lot of times he like still to this day will be like, I can't believe you know what album I'm talking about. Like my mom and dad taught me well. Okay. but no, he's not my parents' age. Like there's an age difference between them, but it was never weird to us. It was like an adjustment everybody else had to make. And I think the thing was, is that we were always very aware of who we were through it and also what needed to change about either one of us in order for our relationship to go well. There was a time in the middle there where we were a little estranged, I guess you could say, for like a year. And then we were broken up for a year in between. Collectively, it's been about 10 years because we were together when I was still at the shop, working at the shop. That's where we met. We were friends. Like it was great. And throughout the years, he's willing to listen to me. And I'm willing to take the time to explain something that I need differently from him. And I think that's a huge piece. Both of those pieces. Because a lot of people, my husband won't listen to me. I'm like, yeah, but are you saying what you need to him? Because a lot of times they're not. Because I get the privilege of speaking to both sides of the coin, you know? Right. And so I mean, it helps our relationship be better too, because I learn all this all day long. And there's been times though where Tony would say, well, I'm going to need you to remind me of that. And I'm like, I'm not your coach, babe. Like, I can't. I'm already reminding myself of 75 things that I'm trying to do better. He's like, oh, you're right. I can't. And that's another big thing I think that we do differently than a lot of other couples. I'm not his mom. I don't tell him what to do. I'm not mothering him. I'm not, you know, I do make sure he has what he wants in the fridge. And it's a better thing for all of us. in the fridge. And that's part of me that does like to take care of him. But I'm not babying him. I'm not cleaning up after him. I'm not, you know, those kinds of things. And to where I feel like that happens a lot in a lot of relationships where there's this mother dynamic. And of course,
it drives me nuts.
You don't want to have sex with your mom.
Like, right. Yeah.
And vice versa. I mean, the guys still do, but the woman's like, I don't want to have sex with my kid. This isn't cute. Like, you're not attractive. That's not attractive. And so I think we do well with that as we treat each other like adult humans and not like our children or coworkers or whatever it may be. And the ability for me to be able to speak, and he does too, he brings things up too, but very locker room conversations in my life with Tony. So he played hockey for whoever's watching. And so, but you guys have both been in the locker room. It's harsh conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
So there's been times where I'm like, bro, you kind of tone it down.
Yeah.
Like I'm all for it. I grew up in a male dominated world. It's fine. I get it. And when we're having a conversation about our relationship, I don't need you to talk to me like you're going to like smack me with a towel or something, you know, like calm it down. And it took a while for him to, because even still sometimes if he's really in the zone, like he'll make just the harshest comments and I'll be like, babe.
It's tough when especially with how long that his career spanned, you know, like, I mean, he played one of the hardest sports at the highest level for years. I mean, I'm sure I never made it quite to the level with base in comparative to baseball, but I know that there's still times where I catch myself saying some things and I'm like, oh shit, that was from the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. that needed to stay in the locker room.
Yeah. Well, often he'll say, damn it, I let it out.
He let out the twister.
Yeah. He let it out. We do have a hymn
version
sometimes where I'm like, oh, do you need to go out into the garage? He's like, ooh, I think I do. I'm like, okay, I'll see you later.
Yeah, bye.
And so instead of being like, oh my God, why are you in such a mood? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I know how he operates. There are certain days that I know that I'm like, I'll wait till tomorrow to go into a deep conversation with you. And I'm willing to do that. Not everybody is, and that's fine. We're very independent humans and in a good relationship that works together. And it's something that I'm proud of, honestly. Like, I'm very proud of what we've built. It's funny, when we got engaged 2 years ago, and everyone's like, that doesn't know us. Oh my God, really? 9 years? I don't understand. Or like, almost 9 years. And I said, I joke and say, well, I got the diamond I wanted because I waited forever. But in reality, our relationship has lasted longer than his previous marriage. You know, it's lasted longer than most people's marriages. So like a lot of that shit that would cause you to get divorced, like we've already been through it.
Yeah. Me and my wife were together for 9 years before. So,
I mean, it was fine. And we figured it out. You know, we knew what was okay and what wasn't in our worlds. There was a time where I thought I had to have children and he said he was open to it. And you see his older children. And then he came back a couple of years later and was like, no, I don't want to be an old dad. He's like, nothing against old dads, but I don't want to be an old dad. I've done it. It's exhausting. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, he's done the young kid thing. It's a lot of work. And he's like, I don't want to be a 70-year-old guy at my kid's graduation. Like, I don't want to do it.
That's where I'm at right now. You know, 30, gonna be 37 in a couple months. I've got two kids already and getting in, you know, dating. It's like, that's a question. Like, hey, you want more kids? And, you know, it's, I don't know. It's a tough question to answer.
It's tricky.
It is.
So he was 43.
Okay.
44 when we started dating. And we weren't in the place where we were going to have babies right now either, right. You know? And so he's just like, I just don't think. And so I moved out. I told him, I said, okay, I need to not wake up next to the man who treats me like a queen every single day, because I'll never make my own choice by that. And I don't want to wake up in 5 years and hate you because mm-hmm. I didn't have kids. And he was like, does that mean we're breaking up? I said, no, I mean, I don't think so. It was one of these things, again, I've never seen anybody act like this before. I just followed what I thought we could do, and we did. And I had all the time to kind of sort that out for myself. And I had a couple of moments where I realized that everybody else had told me I'd be a good mom. I would be a great mom. I mother people all day long. It's part of my job. And it's like, but I realized that was one of those things, like, that's placed on you, you know, and a lot of women were told that, like, you get married, you have babies. That's what you do. And I realized that was somebody else told me I had to do that, not me. And I always said I want to do adopt too. That's where it kind of hit me too. It was like, I never had that like yearning to birth a child, which some women do. And that's beautiful. Sure. And that wasn't my game plan. And I think part of it was I was sick and I'm like, oh my God, I might die trying to have a baby. And this is where we live. This is a great example of our relationship. And he knows this. I feel very confident about my decision that I'm not going to have my own children. Like, we have his kids, we have grandkids. Like, that's where we're at. I and nieces and nephews and all my friends have 1,000 babies. If I wake up in 5 years and decide I must just have a child, then I will deal with that. And I will leave him, or he'll make the decision. I'll adopt a child. I'll do that because that's the world we live in. Mm-hmm. I have the ability to change my mind if I want to. And that's kind of the chances that we take, I feel like, every day. And that's where a lot of people wind up miserable, is because they don't feel like they can say that.
Right. They feel like they're stuck.
Mm-hmm. And I just told them, I'm like, I don't think that's going to happen, but I don't know.
Right.
We don't know how we're going to feel. I'm like, you could just, I mean, people love each other. No one gets married knowing they're going to get divorced. Let's be right. Real. You don't think you're not going to love that person anymore or want to be with them every day anymore. So when I tell people that, they're like, okay with that? And I said, well, how can he not be? At least I'm telling him.
Being honest,
you know, I don't know what I'm going to feel like then. Yeah. So that's the reality of where we're at. And I think it helps, the age difference helps, because his maturity level and mine are very close, honestly.
Well, women mature faster than men. Mm-hmm. What do they say? Men don't actually totally mature until what, 43?
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Oh, I tell my friends, oh, yeah, a lot. I'm like, don't date the guy until he's 40. Yeah. Tell you, trust me, it's much better. But no offense.
don't like women mature at what, like 27 or 28 or something like that? They're fully,
I think it's like younger than that. Younger, I think it's like 25. That?
Okay.
I'm not positive, right. But yeah.
Yeah, man.
So it's, I know, it's, we're wild.
We still got some years to go.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's the time, buddy.
But what happens is, and if you look at the way, again, that our brains develop, it's just that there's still that piece of like spreading your seed is still there in your brain. And then you get a little older and like, I don't want to do that anymore. That's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm trying to do. And so things just change. And I've watched it happen in people, especially like his friends and stuff, where he mentioned it to me when we first started dating. He told me, I ruined you. You're never going to be able to date a guy your age again. Mm. Like, early on. And I was like, what? And he explained it. And I've watched that happen. But the nice thing too is that a lot of what I've dated Tony when he was a pro athlete, no, mm-hmm. absolutely not. He channels that rage. So with fighting, he channels that energy output in a different way now. And it's not that he was bad. Like, I know plenty about him. Then he was not an abusive husband. He was, you know, whatever, but he was so committed to that. And I was a different person then too. I'm like, nah, that would not have worked.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit.
Well, and that's having played professional baseball. I mean, obviously not, didn't make it to the major leagues, but I mean, your schedule is still similar.
Yeah.
But you know, it's hard to maintain a relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it really is, especially like, that's your passion. That's what you're going for. That's your focus. So it's hard for you to give anything else to anyone else.
Yeah.
If you're really, truly dedicated to it. And so, I mean, like, I remember when I got drafted, I was dating a girl when I was in college, and she's like, oh, well, I didn't really, like, wow, that's cool. You got drafted. Congratulations. But I didn't actually think that it was going to happen. And I'm like, oh, well, thanks for the vote of confidence. Yeah. You know? Well, she's like, so are you going to do it? I'm like, well, hell yeah.
You're like, yes.
Yeah. And she's like, well, what, me or baseball? I said, well, I've been in love with baseball for a hell of a lot longer than I've been in love with you. So
that's terrible.
See ya. Wow.
What a shitty thing to say to somebody. Well, wow.
Me or baseball. It was just, yeah.
Yeah. No. Love me or baseball. What? Right. Like, who do you think's ever going to not choose baseball? Right. They've been going after that their whole lives.
Exactly. And I was just like, wow, okay. Well, see you later. Good luck.
Well, and then if it's the way you plan on paying, you know, funding your life for your family, then of course you're going to be focused in it on 100%. Why wouldn't you?
Also, it's just like
your dream.
Right. Exactly. You want, like, if you're truly loving and supportive and you knew that this was a dream of mine or a goal of mine, like, supportive, you know, like, hey, like, want to do this? I'm going to support you in that. Like, hey, go for it. Like, I'm going to be your biggest cheerleader. Like, you're sitting here, didn't even think I was going to get drafted. Like, what the fuck?
The same thing goes with, I think, people when you're date someone who's an entrepreneur and you're not.
Oh, for sure.
There's a big issue with that a lot. There's an adjustment period that you have to understand. I have a big problem with women who marry a man or start dating a man, and then he was all those things. And then now you're in a relationship and now you're like mad that he's all those things. I'm like, wait, nothing changed. Yeah. I don't understand. He was working long hours and owning his own company before that. And now you're mad. I don't get it. So it is an adjustment. I think it's a similar concept to you're dating an athlete. Like, it really is their commitment. Like, we were talking about your diet, the commitment to your body and to your craft is a huge part of who you are and why you are the person that you are. I feel that Tony is a better man because of how dedicated he's always been to his body. I'm healthier now, and I've been on a better journey with my health because of watching him. I wasn't taught that. I wasn't an athlete. But you guys have that. It's part of the way you tick, you know?
And
it's
it's
a skill. It's a really, really nice skill that you can use everywhere.
No, for sure. It kind of leads into the next question that I had for you is, you know, athletes' mindsets are wired so differently from other people. What are some lessons that you think more people could adopt from elite athletes or elite performers?
That's a great question, because I wish more people realized the self commitment, but also being able to be really honest with raw with what's going on with your own body or mind. Like, if you feel off, you're so much more aware of it, I think, than the average person is, because you know your body so well. It's like a well-oiled machine that you're super in touch with.
Using it all the time.
Exactly.
You know? So I think that's a problem with a lot of our society today. Mm-hmm. We're not using our bodies.
Yeah. Not thinking about, you know, what fuels you best. Everybody's different, right? You figured it out. You know what protein powder makes you feel the best. You know what kind of food makes you feel the best. So recognizing that isn't just, oh, he's into his body. No, it is so much more than that. It's a perfected skill of commitment to something, to where I think if people looked at it that way, they could recognize, wow. So if someone can have that level of commitment to themselves and to a sport, they can have that level of commitment to anything else too.
Yeah. 100% agree with you.
Couldn't agree more.
And I think I'm not sure. I mean, maybe for him too, because he was the enforcer. He was the fighter. And I mean, I'm sure, because I know in baseball is it's a huge mental game, and being able to be in control of your emotions. And I know hockey is too, because you're out there banging around, hitting, you know, and him being a fighter, I mean, I bet his emotional maturity is probably pretty high, being able to flip that switch from, all right, like, hey, I'm in control and all this, to like, all right, now I'm being tasked to beat the shit out of somebody. I got to flip that on, and I got to flip my emotions into another gear to get there. I bet Tony's probably pretty emotionally intelligent for what his role was within hockey.
It's wild to watch him because of that. And he'll tell you, if you ever asked him this question, he'll tell you that he never fought one fight angry, but he'd fought that person in his head 5 times. 10 times before he ever went on the ice. Cause you're pretty aware of who the other fighter was on the other team, you know? So he would watch them. He would study them. He would think about how he's going to handle it. He would think about who he's protecting on the ice that night. He's a big thing about, so Bobby Plager has this very beautiful quote that he made, and Tony lives by it. Are you playing for the emblem on the front or for the name on the back? Tony was never playing for the name on the back. He was playing for the team. His job was to protect people like Al McGinnis and Wayne Gretzky and Brett Hall. Like, that was his job, and he knew it, and he was happy to do it. He didn't want to do anything else. He wasn't trying to fill all these other spots. He followed it. And so to hear him talk about that clarity of the job, but then being able to fight those guys in his head and go out there with enthusiasm to have the fight. And then afterwards it was over. Like, it's like nothing ever happened. That was like many of those guys, you'll hear him tell stories. Like, they go have a beer afterwards. They're even one of the guys, he like broke his orbital bone and they went to the hospital. You know, like it was to hear those stories, but then to watch him in life manage his emotions. And sometimes he doesn't, but he's aware of it. When he gets to a place where he knows it's bigger than he can control, he removes himself from the situation. I'm very sensitive to big emotions, and he's got a big personality all the time. And so he'll remove himself from the situation when that happens. That takes such a high degree of knowing yourself. And I can watch him when we go into public, you know, he controls it then. And if we're out and he has to turn it on and off, like, it is wild to watch how quickly he can
shift.
Yeah. And he's not pretending. Like, he truly, because if he doesn't have control over it, we won't go anywhere. He'll stay home. No. Like, if it's one of those days, you know, it's just like, oh, I can't.
Well, we'll love to get him on, and but I don't want to take away from the things that you do. Is there a way that you kind of correlate some of those stories or things like that to like help the people that you're coaching? Like, is there a way like, hey, this is something, again, going back to that elite performer and that athlete's mindset, are there things that you're now, you know, having been with him and all that, that you're using to help coach your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of things about his, how he also runs his company now. So he has a glass installation company, and I've watched that go through lots of different growth curves too. And him become a better, it was to him, I'm a team player, but then he had to become a better leader, you know, with some of these different things. So I'll use him as an example a lot with my male clients, because they have respect for him. They know that what he's accomplished. But to be able to tell them stories about, you're not the only one. Like, Tony had a big issue with this guy, such a big problem that he was not able to fix, and he had to let the guy go. And the guys are like, not the only
even
one.
He
yeah,
like,
yeah, it's a lot of, he's a human.
Right.
And I feel like that's a one thing I use a lot, is that I watch this, he's never not been human, and we all are. And that's what we were talking about before, about being so hard on ourselves. You know, you get caught up in that. But utilizing that, even him, and I know all of his friends, you know, I see these guys and they're people too, and their wives are normal people. Mm-hmm. And so it allows me to draw parallels for those of us who are comparing ourselves to people that we may think are better than us or have achieved more than us, and point out places where, like, they're still not okay with that either, where they still have to deal with these things. And it's allowed me to have a lot more empathy, I think, but then also to see where athletes are treated drastically different in good and bad ways. And so I think it can mirror in some ways the way that people treat entrepreneurs or people who have a lot of money. And so I can draw those parallels differently than I probably would have been able to if I wasn't in a relationship with him.
That's awesome.
Well, in a world where gender roles are constantly shifting, what do you think modern masculinity should actually look like?
That question. Because I think it's, you know, all we hear is toxic masculinity.
Right.
It's like,
oh, yeah.
And we were talking before, yeah, that was the episode that we had to cut.
Oh,
that's well, funny. We redid it in a much
calmer fashion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's a
but
hot topic.
No, it is. It's huge.
And it can get blown out of proportion very quickly.
Sure.
Because similarly to, like, everyone's a narcissist and everybody has this, like, these hot topic words get caught up on the internet and they turn into something that they're not. So I think masculinity is a form of being a gentleman. I also think it's a form of handling your own shit. And when I say that, I mean, like, if your car's broken, you deal with it. If you need to pay a bill, you deal with it. If you have a problem, you deal with it. Maybe not immediately. I get it if you need a process and whatever, but you handle what's on your plate. I have a father that, if you met him, he's not a large man. He's nothing that I think some people think masculine. You have to be big,
physically strong.
Yeah.
Or whatever, yeah.
But my dad, when we were growing up, like, he was the epitome of that. He respected my mom. He was a great dad. He was there. He brought, he brought home money to pay our bills, and he helped his parents when they needed it. And he did those things. And I feel like it all came from a place of kindness. You know, he still had his fun stuff. Like, he had a, you know, cool truck and a motorcycle and whatever, but why not? Like, you can still do that. I think a lot of people twist it up now and think if you're going to be this masculine man, then you have to, like, either, you know, be biting into raw liver or something, yeah, or, you know, you're running around yelling at people. And it's like, I'll tell you what I know. And prior to even knowing Tony and me just working in the male dominated industries, and then just being in a lot of rooms with a lot of people who call themselves, like, influencers before it was cool and stuff. Yeah. The guy who's the loudest in the room, he's not the masculine one.
No, it's the one in the back that's quiet.
100%. Oh, yeah. It's always the quiet one that actually truly not only, he would never, here's the other part. Most of the time, masculine men do not refer to themselves as masculine, nor would they ever.
Right.
Right.
They would be wildly uncomfortable if you're like, are you masculine? They're going to be like,
what?
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Because that's not part of it. There's not, I also think people get it twisted with ego. Some men, their egos are twisted up, but like a lot of times that's not what's part of the masculinity
no,
at all.
No. Yes. Having the ability to say I'm wrong or I don't know or anything. Like, I think there's nothing manlier. Like that's one of the manliest things that you can do is 100%. Just be like, you know what? But like, if you say you don't know, well, I'm going to find the answer. I'm going to get back to him to find that answer. So yeah, I know. Ego is a big thing, and emotional intelligence, I think, is another one that, especially now in today's society, you know, back in the day, men don't have an emotion. I think that's the worst thing that you could say about a man.
Yeah.
No, a man is someone that has the emotional intelligence to understand what his emotions are, being able to control them and then process them and move forward.
You have daughters?
No, two sons.
Two sons. Okay. Cause I know you have two sons too, right? Yep. It was just making me think of a masculinity. I have a friend who, unfortunately, his sister just passed away from cancer, and he is engaged to one of my best friends from growing up, and he has a daughter and she has a son. And so they're doing the whole blended family.
Yeah.
They're figuring it out. But she was asking me how to help her deal with some anxieties that the daughter was having. And I told her, I'm like, let her see her dad cry. Like, let her see him have feelings about his sister dying. Like, that's real. And we grow up as little girls thinking that our daddies have no feelings other than loving us. And it's not helpful. Because then you're a woman and you see a man that you're dating or friends with have emotions and you're like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And it can come off angry or it can come off scary and all that stuff where it's like, if we just focus more on being human beings, I feel like that's the most masculine thing a man can be, is let himself be humbled and human and take care of, like, take pride in things that matter to you, but show up when you say you're going to do what you say you're going to do. I think that that's the most underrated piece of the puzzle, really.
Yeah,
I agree. And you know, you said be humble, and I think that's something a lot of men struggle with.
Yeah,
because they always want to be the loudest guy in the room. They always want to be the guy that, you know, that answers all the questions, or the guy that always has the answer for everything, and you know, or the guy that thinks he's the toughest guy in the room, and you know, things like martial arts will teach you that pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah.
that you're not. You know,
I'm sure.
Not.
Yeah,
sure.
But yeah, so. It's crazy.
I think that the deal is if people recognize that we all know if you're being the loudest guy in the room, we know that that's a show, dude.
Yeah.
Like, we just do. Everybody knows. Anybody that's worth seeing your show is aware of the fact that that's a show. You know, not everybody is aware of it, I guess, but that's where I wish more people, it comes down to the work on yourself. If you're not comfortable with who you are, you're going to be the loudest, try to be the loudest guy and try to be the fighter and be all those things, because you're not comfortable with who's actually living in there.
Right.
Really.
Yeah. I mean, you work with a lot of males. So like, being vulnerable, is that something, you know, and that's kind of one of the things about being a man is that, you know, one thing you felt men were more comfortable talking about and being is vulnerable?
No, I have to talk to them about it and remind them sometimes if they tell me a very vulnerable thing, I'm like, you need to tell her that too. Yeah. He's like, oh yeah. And then what's fun is then sometimes I'm like, did you tell her that? And he's like, I did tell her. So like, they start to see, because I have to kind of use proof sometimes for them. They're like, I don't know if I should tell her. I'm like, just trust me, tell her. And then the reaction's better. The conversation goes better. Maybe they're not fighting, blah, blah, blah. They see the fruit of the labor, you know, and realize, oh, there might be something to this. And it just does come from a place of, and a lot of times people are screwed over. A lot of my male clients have dealt with really shitty women, you know, have treated them bad. So now they do have these walls for a reason. And being able to give them that nudge sometimes, we're like, I think it's safe if you're vulnerable here with this person. I love that they can be vulnerable with me. And that's healthy. And where can we also put it in safe places in your life to where it's going to be healthy there too?
That's great.
It's a big growth moment for sure.
For sure.
So what are some non-negotiable habits you've seen separate successful business owners from those who just spin their wheels?
Schedules is a big one. People who don't write themselves a game plan for the week tend to spin their wheels more often or waste a lot of time. And I think taking care of yourself is a big one. If there's somebody who's like, I'm in the office at 6 a.m. every morning and I don't leave until 9 p.m. every night, and they're eating like shit and they're not taking care of their family and they feel like they're literally failing everywhere else
but work,
or they, most of the time they feel like they're failing at work too, but they're just putting all the work into the work because that's what they're supposed to do. It keeps you on this cycle, this loop-de-loop that never gets you past. And so it's hard to break it. But that's one of the main things I think is taking care of yourself and knowing that you're allowed to and that it all fits together. So I think that the proverb is that if you want the most successful life, it's you have to step foot, one foot, just a foot in every room every day. Because it doesn't take a ton of time, but just that moment of attention in each space is what will keep you moving forward versus feeling like you're spinning your wheels. And then you have to take a whole week off to try to catch up and do this and do that. And then you get sick because your body's like, what are you doing to me? And it just becomes a snowball effect otherwise.
So by the space, like when you say step foot in every space, like what exactly do you mean by that?
So if we were to look at mindset. So that would be whether it's therapy, meditation, reading, journaling, whatever that is. But then you have your business or your job. And then you have your relationships, whether that's you call your mom today, you know, you make a point to go have an actual face-to-face conversation with your wife. You know, you go pick up your kid from school and get ice cream with them, like something like that. Like it could even just be that you drive them home and you don't have the radio on and you talk like those. It's just intention, you know? And then the other one is in movement, whether it's that you fed your body really well that day, you made sure you were hydrated, you made sure you got good sleep. Doesn't mean that you have to do all those things in the checklist every day. Because most of the time, that's just checking shit off a list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you put the intent into putting just a small amount of energy into each of those places, the fulfillment that you feel is what will project you forward more often.
Yeah, it's all like 100% agree. And that's something I know that, you know, I haven't done 75 hard. I know you've done 75 hard, but, you know, you hear Andy, if you follow Andy Frisell and them, I mean, you know, he's started it and he's been doing, he did it, he would do it, but then like he'd always come out online on and be like, you know what, I gotta start over because I wasn't intentional mm-hmm. about the things that I was doing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's just so much to that being intentional, and it versus check, like you said, checking things off the list, it means you're actually checked in, mentally focused, and emotionally ready to handle what's being thrown at you. And it's been huge for my business, yeah. being intentional in what I'm doing, especially spending time with my kids.
Yeah.
Like I wouldn't say I was a bad father, but I just wasn't fully present. And I just feel like it's made me more present in my relationship with my kids because
it's very common. It's super common because the world is loud. There's a lot going on. And then we do slow down enough when we're with our kids, it's hard to be in the room sometimes. That transition period we talked about at the beginning of the show, that might be very helpful for any fathers listening, is to give themselves that space.
Yeah.
5 minutes. I need 5 minutes or whatever it is. In your car for 5 extra minutes if you need to, you know, just to give your body and mind the ability to shift. I think 75 hard is a great tool. My hope is that people can keep it up when they're not on 75 hard. That's the problem I see the most, is they need the challenge. They need to be a part of the challenge and everyone looking at them and watching what they're doing in order for them to take care of themselves.
And then like fall right back into
old habits when that's on day 76.
100%. And it's not healthy. That's right. The thing. I'm like, what if you treated yourself that way because you treated yourself that way?
Right.
Because you deserved it. And they're like, oh.
Well, you hope after 75 days that it's just become a habit and that it sticks, that stays with them. But yeah.
That's the point, right. I think, is why he made it that time frame. Like, I understand the premise for sure, but I know a lot of people that, as soon as they don't have that accountability post anymore, they stop.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the sucky part. So that's the part where, like, me as a coach, I come in and I'm like, hey, there's something missing here. Because if you're only doing it because you want to be cool like Andy and check the box and post the thing, which is why a lot of people start, which is cool. But if that's the only reason you're doing these things, there's still something missing here that we got to talk about. Because if you should care enough about yourself to do it, whether anyone sees you or not.
Yeah.
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we've gone through pretty much all the things that we have. Is there anything else that you touch on or talk about?
No, I think we did it a lot.
Yeah, we covered a lot. Yeah. It was awesome.
Great.
Very cool.
Awesome, Jamie. Thank
you. We appreciate you coming on. We always, you've seen the show. I don't know if you've seen it all the way to the end, but we always have one surprise question at the end.
Okay.
We call it the Tombstone Game.
Okay.
Here lies Jamie. What does it say, or what do you want it to say on your tombstone?
Oh, I do remember that, and I should have thought of it in advance. Oh, man.
Take a second.
Your light is Jamie. She lived. That almost makes me want to cry just saying that. She lived.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Simple.
Thank you. Thank you again so much. This was awesome.
Yeah, you're welcome, guys. It was a great talk. Thank you.
That was awesome. Well, and thank you guys all for paying attention to the show. If you haven't clicked that subscribe button for us yet, please do so. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below. And we will see you next time.